coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
And we are back on Hey Kids Comics. Welcome, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to the second issue of Story Arc. I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the Jedi Cole.
Good evening, everybody. We're going green this week.
We are going green and gold. Isn't that how that song goes? I don't know how that song goes. I don't even know what I'm saying.
I don't know. Are you thinking of that Burl Ives Silver and Gold song?
Probably,
Santa
yes.
Movie?
It's probably what I'm thinking about, yes.
Goddamn Santa movies.
Listen, talk. I work
What's
retail.
The matter? You haven't ever seen a talking snowman before?
I work retail.
Well, pull up ice block and freeze your ass off while I tell you about the most famous reindeer of all.
That's right. What is it? Hysterical hypothermia. Strip off all your clothes in the middle of this. Let's keep these kids out here for hours in the freezing
right.
cold and tell them a story until they hallucinate a snowman is talking to them. That's what we should really be doing. Speaking of hallucinating, I'm hallucinating, Cole. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there so far, but you've had to delve into the heady atmosphere of Green Lantern.
To
quote Dwayne Dickles in the last episode, Mr. Lantern.
Well, he was the Lantern. It was like the Green Lantern and the Lantern. Dweeby was the Lantern. We really should do a sixth issue on just the supporting cast of...
that is so true.
...of all the Green Lanterns. Because, I mean, we're going to touch on Carol Ferris. We touched a little bit on, Solomon Grundy. Damn it. Thought you were going to slide one by me, didn't you, pal? but there's so many interesting characters involved, including, the sum total of the Green Lantern Corps, which I know we've gone over many times.
Wait for it. That's actually the next issue.
That's issue,
297.
297 is the Green Lantern Corps, yes. So, but tonight, we just covered the birth Green Lantern, and now we talk about the birth of the modern Green Lantern. And we'll talk about the Corps and the supporting cast, but this is it, baby.
Absolutely. This is, actually, this, of course, the second issue of the arc. It's not easy being green. Blinded by Science.
Yes, perfectly titled. Cole, you are a wordsmith, my friend, as always. But where we left off, if you haven't listened to last issue, I would suggest doing so. No spoilers, but we got spoiled a lot.
Good Lord.
Shocking and
the things we learned. If you think you knew the original, the Golden Age Green Lantern, you did not.
You did not know, but where we left off,
unless of course you are the author of the webpage that I think you should
the blog should... yes, blog of Oa, where we cribbed a lot of our research from. Now, Comic Alliance, Wikipedia, the various websites where we usually get our research, but coming across the blog of Oa, especially for the first two, was astoundingly helpful, and I've learned so much about the creation of the character that I never knew. And it's amazing. That's all there is to it. But coming out of last issue on the pivot point of Seduction of the Innocent, Wortham, and where we so often that it's strange how often this podcast pivots on on the Seduction of the Innocent, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It becomes like, you know, like Earth is the center of the universe in comics and pop culture. You wind up with, I think you can't help but have Seduction of the Innocent as sort of the center of the comics universe in a way.
Well, and Seduction of the Innocent killed the superhero comic for 10 years, destroyed it. They did everything they could to keep comics afloat during that time period where they had wrecked it against the shoals of political correctness and even further political. I don't even know how to define what Seduction of the Innocent did to comics and the Comics Code of Authority, those type of things. But you had, coming out of that, you still had your Batman, your Superman, and your... But we have talked at length about things like Batman fighting giant robotic T-Rexes. And, you know, Superman just basically just hanging out in space and when he's not in space, hanging out with his girlfriend Lois Lane.
Or his other girlfriend, Lori Lamaris, the mermaid.
The damn mermaid. Why not? Throw a mermaid in there. People love mermaids. And doing, you know, Wonder Woman things. Again, mainly fighting larger-than-life monsters and robots. And then,
anything that could be construed as moderately wholesome in the face of being a purely fantastic.
Right. So this is when DC starts buying up Fawcett and All American and trying to get there and trying to get back on track by running books like Plastic Man and the Blackhawks under DC now. So they're running them under DC. So they bought up, they Netflixed everything and brought it into DC. So all of these small, I'm putting this in big air quotes, All American certainly isn't small. We discussed last day, Hawkman and, you know, Dr. Fate and the Spectre. And
certainly not at their heyday.
No. But during this period, because they crushed them, they couldn't release the books that they did, so they sold DC. DC was smart. So DC started to look at patterns. First, Marvel was kind of buying pattern, demographic, who they were trying to sell, and kind of gerrymandering their business to that. And one of the things that they started to look at was what comic book covers were selling. What are we trying to sell to? What can we put out there? So they developed Showcase. Showcase was the DC book where you had what did you have in Showcase? I'm trying to remember. I know that Showcase launched the Flash in issue 4, the new Flash.
Yeah. Didn't Green Arrow appear in Showcase as well? As it was just pretty much a kind of a proving ground almost.
Well, that's what they were doing, but they were also running Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane. And,
oh yes,
and.
Was that also the home of Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen?
I believe it was, because what they would do is they would run like 3 real safe issues.
Yeah.
And then they would push out something. So keep it. So this was way before we started looking at things like the idea of retconning and multiple Earths and things like that. So they had this entire catalog of characters at their disposal now, and they started looking at the Flash and looking at Garrick and saying, I bet you we could update this and sell it. So they reinvented the Flash, and they made him, for lack of a better term, flashy, and ran it, and it was a hit.
What also was taking the Flash into that kind of, in the last issue, I mentioned that kind of pop culture pseudoscience.
Yes.
Where you add a little bit of chemistry to the lightning strike.
Correct. And literally, thank you, Cole. That was good. That was good. Adding a little chemistry to the lightning strikes, absolutely what they did. Because mysticism and magic and, all the things that were the parlor psychics and things like that were out. And now we had science. Like you said, armchair scientists. And everybody wanted to be involved in the sciences. We saw the big science push. And Julie, old Mr. Schwartz, or Julie, if you're nasty, loved him some science fiction.
And that was, of course, comic book legend Julius Schwartz, who captained DC Comics through its best and most turbulent periods at intervals. he was just sort of like the Jonas Grumby of comics. I'll let people figure that one out on their own.
So they did. So the next. So they launched Flash. Flash was a hit. They knew that the next 4th issue, the 8th issue of Showcase, was coming up, and they needed something to push out. They didn't want to do the same old thing. So they asked old Julius Schwartz to come up with it. Julius was interested in the creation of the new Flash. Which was old Carmine Infantino, and I can never pronounce Bob's last name. Kaniger? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
I don't. Whatever. So they were into it, and they needed new properties. They started looking at that back catalog, and then they landed on old Alan Scott, which, by the way, we missed last issue. The one thing I really want to bring up, because that's the way it always was, that the character was based on Alan Ladd. The look of that character, look of Alan Scott, blonde hair, blue-eyed, kind of chiseled jaw, was based on Alan Ladd. So, Showcase 22, we got a new, 8 years after the old Green Lantern, 8 years after All-American shelved Alan Scott and The Seduction of the Innocent and DC buying up, we got a new, John was duly said, John, I need a new Green Lantern, and John went to town and created this character on this idea that there were these space police that would have a beat. And it was this Green Lantern beat. Based the character on Paul Newman and the swagger of Chuck Yeager. So I think it was a full stop. Full stop.
Absolutely. You can see that. When you know that that's the case, you can really see it.
So, Cole, are you old enough to... Because I'm old enough to have seen interviews with Chuck Yeager. Do you remember...
I am old enough to remember being baffled as to why all the adults were so interested, so glued to the television set when man walked on the moon.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just, what? It's so boring. They've been at it for an hour, and he hasn't even got to the ladder yet. Come on.
So Chuck Yeager was a test pilot, and he was a real-life Steve McQueen. Like... Not Steve McQueen, the movie director, Steve McQueen, the actor. Like, swagger, looks, and death-defying feats, and would always be pushing the envelope. One of those guys that women wanted to be with and men wanted to be, and also with, we find out later. And couple that with what you were saying about man walking on the moon in the space race. Nothing was more important.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This was a time when, you know, leading into the space race, you have, especially with Sputnik, and you have this period where anything could go on in outer space. And in fact, on one of my live shows on DallasOnAir.com, Isle of Toys, plug, a recent issue I talked to about the creator of some of the most fascinating toy lines. And back in the 50s was a toy line called Outer Spacemen, which failed because once they walked on the moon, or once they got to the moon, they figured out nobody was coming. So NASA pretty much killed that toy line.
So, yes, so they create this Green Lantern based around the idea of this of the popularity of the space race and the machismo and you know, swagger of a Chuck Yeager and a stunt flyer, a daredevil, a man without fear, because that's what Yeager. So they called up old Gil Kane and said, Gil, baby, we need a character. So Gil started fleshing it out. He looked at Paul Newman and said, which by the way, I found out in my research that Paul Newman and Gil Kane and Paul Newman were neighbors.
Oh, okay. So you just sort of like, hey, Paul! Sketch, sketch, sketch.
Yeah, he's like, stand real still.
What do you want? That's okay. Off you go. Go race your car or something.
One that I didn't know. There's a bunch of this research, again, just blew me away. We did the arc on Batman's villain, and we started looking at things like Veidt's The Man Who Laughs, and, you know, all where the reference points came from for these villains, and the real-world applications, like... I was blown away then, and I'm blown away now to find out that Sinestro was based on David Niven.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah, with the mustache and kind of the drawn-out nose, and yeah.
And the Pink Panther glove.
And the Pink Panther. Oh, wait.
No, he had a ring. Okay, I get that too confused.
And the Guardians of the Universe at the time were based on, so Guardians of the little blue guys that hang out in space and kind of decree law across all of space time were based on it's coming back, David Ben Gurion, the Israeli Prime Minister at the time.
Good Lord, which thing's like all over the map.
Yeah, if you look at a picture of David Ben Gurion, yeah, it's there. It looks like Ganthet. So I'm sure there are people that would see Ganthet and be like, that looks like David Ben-Gurion. To us, we're like, oh, is that Ganthet? No, that's an actual historical. It's an actual historical guy. So Kang got a hold of this and started really working it out. They didn't bother waiting for sales numbers. They just were like, this is gold. Push it out. 1960. Boom. Broom and Kane fired off this Green Lantern. During that initial run, you would get the Guardian, Sinestro, Necron would come back later
Yeah,
in the
night.
Blackest Night, Star Sapphire, and just an insane, much like the Flash in the Flash's Rogues Gallery. I don't think anybody gives the Green Lantern Rogues Gallery of credit.
Goldface.
Cool. Damn Goldface.
Goldface.
So yes, that's how
I had to get some promised music in there, by the way.
you cut it off for 30 seconds, so we don't owe anybody. I think it
That's
was
right.
fair use. I think that falls
That
under
was
fair use.
definitely fair
Yeah,
use.
I think that certainly falls under fair use. But yeah, so we get the immortal images of Hal Jordan that we, which is Hal Jordan piloting whatever test jet they put him in. That, even Sirs. Spacecraft crashes in the desert, and the Salt Flats was flying that crap, and he's drawn to it, and he meets him, and you get those. I have the toy of that. Do you remember them bust 'em ups?
Oh yeah.
Where I think I sent you the Aquaman, where it's the little like puzzle pieces of the 3D puzzle you build up. I
Yeah,
have
they
the.
were like little figurines I actually found in the garage the other day, tidying up the reproduction of the first appearance of the Flash where he's running through the film
Nice,
as a
nice.
little 3D piece that you would build up.
That's issue four. That's the issue we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And then I have the Hal Jordan, Abin Sur first meeting. Bust 'em up, little bust 'em up figure. It's become an iconic image, and this is where it came from. It came from Ben Kane. Broom had written some of these Golden Age Green Lantern books, so he was a natural. And Kane. For all the things we can say about Gil Kane, he made one hell of a cool ass Green Lantern. From Jump Street, made one hell of a cool ass Green Lantern. Definitely a departure from the Alan Scott Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Very streamlined, very flight suit, very cool.
Very much the I don't know, it's almost like it speaks to the differences in the eras of the comic book hero, where there was kind of a flashy, I don't know, Errol Flynn kind of puffy shirt
Oh yeah, there certainly was.
feel, that kind of old Hollywood hero, where then you go into the more form-fitting.
You could definitely feel that theater flair. Yeah, that Shakespeare in the Park idea of the Scarlet Pimpernel or a Zorro type character versus what you get now, which really space age and sleek and keep in mind, this was the same time period that you were getting like Home of the Future
Yes.
and
In
car.
the future, mom won't have to do dishes. The dishes do themselves.
Right, and the
And
dishwasher's
mom.
3 tons, takes up 2 rooms, and but also during this time
There's
period.
father using his computing device. Good thing he's got a 4-bedroom house to house that monster.
Good thing he lives in the Arctic.
God.
But they also this at this point you get the idea of relaunching something else that's completely new to DC, and this is where they got you, because this is where you took the idea of your two greatest characters that aren't Batman, Superman, or Wonder Woman, and you throw them in a book together, and you call that book Brave and the Bold. And now you have these two guys running around in a relationship that has lasted to today. But this is where you get the launch of the Justice League of America. They kept the oath, they kept everything, and they launched the Justice League. And I mean, the rest there is history. As a Green Lantern was a founding member of the Justice with Manhunter, Aquaman. A lot of people can throw Batman and Superman in that mix, and they were not.
Yes, no, they weren't there to. Where were you when Starro the Conqueror came a conquering? You know that old folksy song,
You know that
Starlo.
Arlo Guthrie song.
Yes, Starro came a-conquering.
We should write an album. Yeah. Folksy, Arlo Guthrie style songs.
This is a song about Starro. You remember Starro?
Starro. Just tell the stories.
Giant starfish alien from outer space.
We should do Alice's Restaurant, but...
set his one great eye on the Earth and didn't account for the fact that the Green Lanterns had an agent there working with a guy from under the sea. And the sole survivor of a distant world.
This goes a little something like this. That's
right. I kid you not, every year at Thanksgiving, we'll stop and spend about a good half hour listening to...
it takes Star a half hour to get through.
Yeah. Starro came a conqueror, and it's become a tradition.
I've got to take a quick aside, because if I don't, I'm going to forget. And you know how we stand on ceremony on this show.
Absolutely, fervently.
How much Big Mouth have you watched?
Oh, dear God. I've not watched the second season yet.
Okay, was it in the first season where they're in the science museum? You would remember, because there is a scene where Garrison Keillor gets beheaded.
Oh, okay, no, I haven't seen
that. Okay, so I can't watch that without dying because of your damn Garrison Keillor impression, which is fantastic. But yes,
Starro attacked.
God damn it! I triggered this.
This spring,
he's like a Manchurian's candidate for Lake Wobegon. This point,
took over Pastor Inkfist with one of his starfish face
I'm
things.
Sorry, ladies. I triggered my fault.
But now we're here to talk about one.
So we get the idea immediately that Green Lantern is creating constructs with energy.
Yes.
We also almost immediately the idea that his ring has a weakness to wood, which Cole brilliantly marked me with last issue. And we're
Go be sure and check that out, because there was some Andy was mixing up a big old pitcher of Haterade, and
I
went mad at it. I helped him realize all that was missing was the sugar.
All that was missing was the sugar.
When you buy the little packets, it's not pre-sweetened.
Andy, you got the sugar.
Got the sugar.
But and this is where we get the weakness to the color yellow, which weird. That was a weak seat at that point.
I had a weakness, and it was all yellow.
That was more updated.
Yeah. Little less old white guy music, more middle aged white guy music.
Yeah, I guess it's probably aged at this point, huh?
Yeah, you're pushing it. If that one spoke to you, you're gonna be pushing middle age any day now.
You're gonna be right on. You're gonna be right with us on this.
Right on the cusp there, buddy.
We start singing Kansas songs, and then it's all downhill from there. Keep in mind, this so much was borrowed. Certain that for meant that. You had to have a lovin'. Like Superman, you had to have a lovin'. So we got Carol, which to this day stands. You had to have a faithful sidekick, a la Jimmy Olsen. And you got that in the form of Tom Kalamaku, who we have talked about in prior years as finally like standing up, because it used to be pretty racist-y back in the day.
Yeah, there was a time, you know... Is this forgivable because of its time? Not necessarily forgivable, but you have to understand there was a time when there were certain things were acceptable or at least accepted. And one of those was a kind of, you know, winking racism that frankly ran a bit rampant. And yes, Moonface was the...
Unfortunately, yes, Moonface. But he had his own little sidekick, and he had a family, and you know they really developed this out as elements to the story because it was formulaic. You had to have it. Superman had it. Batman had it. Wonder Woman had it. Flash had it by this point. So Green Lantern had to have it, and those things will come up time and time again in the next following three issues. They also. Allowed they revived through the pages of the Justice League and the Brave and the Bold they revived the JSA and allowed for crossovers with the original Alan Scott Green Lantern So that happened during this time period going forward too, where Alan Scott was allowed to come back and be the mentor of Hal Jordan through Crisis, through not Crisis on Earth, damn it, what's the thing? We just talked about it last issue with the crystal ball and the Crisis on Two Earths. Was that what it was? I cannot.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, did
Now
you?
we're losing.
Now we're out now. My brain just shut down. Did you see that next season's WB big crossover event is going to be Crisis on Infinite Earth?
Oh no.
So they're actually doing it.
Wow, that's neat, 'cause that just opens the door for them to do anybody and everybody they want.
Right. And which they have been doing, like they're doing the big one right now where they're introducing Batwoman
Yes.
because they can't touch Batman with a 10-foot pole.
Exactly.
Crisis on Earth One, the one I was reaching for. Crisis on Earth One, feeding the Justice Society, issue number 1 of the Justice League of America allowed the JSA to come back. So you got your Dr. Fates, your Hourmans, your original Green Lantern, Black Canary, and your original Hawkmans brought into main DC continuity at that point. And
Yes.
again, they had no idea what they were doing at that point. They had no clue what they were doing at that point. They didn't know what they were going to rip the literal fabric of space-time for the DC universe wide open at that point. So at this point, I want to ask Cole, do you have any favorite Hal Jordan inceptive moments that
It's funny because I was never a big Green Lantern fan. It wasn't one of those characters that just reached out and spoke to me. But then again, I was not a big DC fan early on, and my career with comics was kind of on again, off again. You'd pick up the odd comic book, but rarely did you ever get a good run. And because this was a period where 7-Eleven was your comic shop,
okay.
and you would load up all your comics and paper bags and go trade them with friends and stuff like that. These are things that this was a thing to do back then because we were bored. But the thing about it is that, and if you missed an issue, you were out of the loop. So, but there was also a perception with DC where I one time saw this comic that looked really good because you did judge everything by its cover.
You had to, sure.
Yeah. And it was a $1 comic book, which today you're thinking, oh, gee, what's the matter?
Are you broken?
But yeah, I mean, a dollar comic in an age of like 30-cent comics was a big deal. And so basically, it was sort of like, but the thing is, it said DC on one side, and on the other side, it said dollar comic. And I got it in my head that DC stood for dollar comic,
That's
so I
hilarious.
didn't bother. There was no point. If everything they're gonna have this rigorous price point, then of course I'm going to go elsewhere.
Rigorous price point. $1 was the rigorous price point. And
That's
now
as
it's like
much as like three
$5.
regular comics.
It's like $5 a comic. How dare they charge a...
Yeah.
Oh, man.
They changed their name if they wanted to try to do that again.
They're gonna have to be TC or $2 comics. But as we started heading the 60s, we started to see another change, and this is what I mean by the Green Lantern. Like, we could do 5 issues on the literal history of, we're not going to, but we
Yeah.
could. I wanted to get these two in so we could get a historyation of Alan Scott, which does not get enough credit. It's such a cool character, just doesn't get credit. And
And once you hear those origins, you're like, oh my God.
yeah, and definitely wanted to get Hal Jordan, the credit he creation of the modern mythos of the of Green. There's enough that we could keep going for 5 issues solely on the history of Green Lantern, also within the, but because it does every mimics what's going on in the industry, going on in the, because the sea change that starts happening in the 60s reflects what we see happen occurred in all comics and in all media, really. We got to the moon. It's like you said, right? Once you're on the moon, what are you gonna do? Like that toy line, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you just, once everything becomes more or less demystified, it's harder and harder to sell certain concepts. It was hard to sell magic in the age of science. It's hard to sell that kind of science at the point where, you know, it's no longer as fascinating, impossible.
Right. It's no longer as fun, because keep in mind what we're seeing now, something that we have talked about, I think, on the third issue of Hey Kids Comics, we start to see focus, a renewed focus on things like social issues and race and an upcoming what looks to be a conflict in the Far East. And yes. And all these things are coming to a head. So once again, Green Lantern and comics have to reinvent themselves.
Yes.
So they change Hal's occupation from test pilot, and they kind of pull Carol out a little bit of Hal, because Hal is all over the place. Hal's in space. Hal's, you know, with the JLA. Hal's fighting this on, you know, Sinestro showed up. Hal, so see this wedge being driven in the comics in Carol and Hal. And he starts flying contract work. You know, they try it. They throw a bunch of stuff against the wall to see what fits. And I think the funniest one they ever is Hal Jordan, insurance adjuster.
Wow.
Yeah, they.
And that's not the kind of job where you can get started and then, like, disappear for the better part of the to go fight a war in space.
No, you cannot. You are an insurance adjuster. But the one thing that they entered in this time period that sticks is I would say my third favorite Green Lantern. they introduce Guy Gardner.
Ah, yes. This is also, like you're saying, a period where you have some career changes going on. This is also around the time where you start to see a shift in the Superman titles, where Lois and Clark stop working in print media and begin working in televised media as reporters, as actual, like, on, you know, anchors and reporters and stuff.
Yeah, the times, they are a-changing.
And Clark writes a book, for God's sake.
That's right, he does.
Under a Yellow Sun.
That's right, he
does. Also known as Under a Banana Flavored Sun.
God, if you want. Damn it.
Way back.
Oh, the callback. That was a 3-year-old callback, I think.
Yeah, easily.
You've been hanging on to. So the formula wasn't, and so they had to start introducing news like the Gallic, like Guy Gardner, Pomar, Kilowatt. So they start branching out now, and you see that, and you see that coming out of this lot of cucks, because isn't this roughly the time that we kind of see the lead?
Yes, yeah, you saw some various incarnations, but you're getting on the cusp of the let's take the superhero out of the Legion of Superheroes and turn them into, like, you know, agents of the state or something like that, as it were, and nobody has code names anymore. They're all, you know, it's Chuck Tane and Mitor, Detour, whatever the hell. Steve's going to kill me.
Bring it, Steve. I don't give a crap. But yeah, so that's where we are at this point. This is the invention of the Green Lantern. This is where it came. These two issues that we've done back to back are how we got to a modern Green Lantern. So we have three more issues. Cole, what are the other three issues that we have?
Well, yes, as we're going forward, we want to explore one of the things that's really fascinating about Green Lantern is, you know, for the longest, and you're more steeped in this than I am, you had Hal Jordan.
Yes.
And then every now and again, you might have somebody like Tomar Ree show up, or Vegetable Head. And over time, it just sort of snowballs, because writers are realizing we can do whatever the hell we want.
Yeah.
I want a Green Lantern that looks like a fish and has to wear a fish tank on his head.
Definitely, with the introduction of the Guardians of the Galaxy, you can go crazy, because of the DC universe, you know, outside of Earth, has been explored and mapped and has set to continuity, that you can go buck nasty.
Oh, yes, and all of a sudden, you have no shortage of Green Lanterns with the advent of the Corps. And, you know, it was sort of suggested when the bubblegum pink guy comes down and Hubba Bubba gives Hal his ring.
Bubba. Yes. That is a Muggerville 7 character now.
Hubba Bubba.
Hubba Bubba is the Abin Sur of Muggerville
right.
7.
He, like, came to Earth, didn't die, and won't give up the ring.
They actually had to bring another ring to Earth because he refused to give up his ring. It's like, nope, not going to do it, you asshole. That's fantastic. That's a good... I like that.
But what we're going to talk about in the next issue is it's not easy being green. We have Green to the Core, CORPS,
sure,
to invoke the Green Lantern Corps. Then the final two issues of this arc are basically in Blackest Night and in Brightest Day. And while those are both major story arc components, one of the things I really want to explore within the boundaries of those are the absolute crushing lows.
Yeah.
And the brilliant, radiant, the resilience of the power of will, and how through it all, the light continues to shine.
I like it. I like it a lot. So talk to me about, like, this time period. Do you have any other I kind of wish we could have gotten Catherine on here because of her love of all things space.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah, this would have been a good one for her.
Is there anything else?
She probably could have brought a lot of insight into the space race.
Is there anything else that jumps out at you about this time period in comics or this time period with Green Lantern? Because there's a lot of real weird stuff that has happened during this time period, and we haven't even gotten into, keep in mind, what happens next with Hal Jordan is we get the stuff that we talked about in the Wayback Machine when we start talking about social issues in comic, because you start getting the Green Lantern, Green Arrow running together, where you get the Speedy, and I kind of want to talk about this in Blackest Night, where you get the Speedy drug addiction, but you also get the civil rights movement.
Yeah, and I think it's important to touch upon something we've talked about many times before in different contexts, and that is the Green Arrow, Green Lantern.
Yes, please.
Where you get, the two greens kind of coming together, and I think it's also, is it the Hard Traveling Heroes is the other name of the storyline, where they just kind of go and walk the earth like Kane and Kung Fu.
Yes,
and meet people, get adventures, and and discover what was neat, I think, in retrospect, and I honestly up to this point had never thought of it this way, but it combines a man of skill and a man of power.
Yeah.
So you have both ends of this sort of spectrum of possibility as to, especially, this is typified in DC, is you have a little bit of both out there at all times.
Yeah.
You have your Supermans and your Green Lanterns, and they got nothing on me. But you also have your Batmans and your Green Arrows. And so to pair those guys up, it was sort of like the world's finest for the green guys.
Yeah.
The green team.
Team Green. But they did. They DC tackled a great number of social issues in their comic books, and that's another reason that I really was interested in the Green Lantern, was finding that civil, and I, it was that little, oh, I need to find that. That's hiding in the room somewhere. That Green Lantern, Green Arrow civil rights comic. The stuff where they talk about drug issues. The stuff would really start looking at being at social. I don't think Mark was doing it at the time, outside of extreme metaphor.
Yeah,
we're talking now,
this
about
one,
X-Men and you
well,
know.
I think that the whole Hard Traveling Heroes is epitomized by one of its most famous moments, and that's the confrontation by a kind of everyman, who, especially with the Green Lantern, here you are, the great protector of Earth, and you're kind of concentrating on the needs and rights and protection of certainly Earth, but also the Green Man and the Purple Man and the Purple Man from Marvel, mind you, who doesn't deserve any protection at all.
No, he's bad.
He is bad. But you know, what are you doing for the black man and the yellow man and the brown man?
Right. And this is too, I realize that we've jumped pretty far ahead in the history of Green Lantern when we're talking about Green Lantern, Green Arrow, but you know, we're talking about two absolute juggernauts of the industry that worked on this book in the terms of Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams, which are like, you don't get bigger, period. And to have those two guys working on this book together and tackling the issues that were getting tackled.
Oh, and the thing is, they were already giants at that point.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, they were having to wait around to achieve that stature.
Yes. No, they absolutely didn't. And the books were, and again, if you haven't picked them up or read them, they are collected. You can read them and they hold up, which is a weird, oh, and by the way, there is a Woody Guthrie song called Hard Travelin'.
Nice.
So this dovetails very nicely into the beginning of this issue. So there you go. If you want to pick them up, I would suggest picking them up. They are some of my absolute favorite. All right, Cole. Well, I think we've done issue two of this story arc.
I believe we have reached the end and found ourselves in a great place, upon juxtaposing.
Yeah.
The magical and the scientific.
I think we've done a good job setting up Chicken Head and Hippo Face. Yep. And Plant Boy.
Yeah, Girl's Best Friend, Green Lantern.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The Marilyn Monroe of Green Lanterns.
Yeah, the Chris Starr, the Pink Panther of Green Lanterns.
Sure. All the Green Lanterns that just kind of look like Hal Jordan, but maybe have fangs. just so many weird.
Oh, and not to forget, Carrot Top and Wolfman Jack.
Don't forget Wolfman Jack. Sure. Also, don't forget planets that also might be Green Lanterns, and then little bouncing planets that might be Green Lanterns. So there's a lot to talk about next issue.
And Squirrel, Girl Squirrel.
Squirrel. I want to see the crossover the next time they do a DC.
Oh, yes. We need to see, like, Squirrel Girl take over the mind of Chip.
Well, I was thinking it would be pretty rad because they're both space-based. If you had Chip and Rocket Raccoon.
Oh, there you go.
Because they both have a pretty foul temper. You know, they both have super powerful weapons, both interstellar travelers. Like, wait a second. I just had an idea. I'm going to pull a what's his name? Oh, God, what was the guy's name? The creator of Alan Scott. Why can't I think of his name?
Oh, yeah. Damn it.
Damn it. Now I've lost it. I had a really good joke set up, and now I lost it. Damn it. I'm going to pull a Nodell and just walk into the office DC and be like, I got a book for you. No, I want to see the next crossover, but I want to see Guardians of the Galaxy and the Green Lantern crossover, where you have Hal Jordan and Chip and Rocket Raccoon and Mogo, and like, it really lines up pretty well. Drax and Kilowog. I think we're on to something here. I think Cole got so excited he passed out. Cole, did you die?
No, I'm still here. I'm just having a coughing fit.
Fair enough. We told you this is the Death Rattle podcast.
Yes, indeed.
So that's what I want to see.
If I can live to 300 episodes, we're going to be in good shape.
Don't jinx anything. that's not good. All right. So why don't we plug this one up and we'll get out of here and get ready for all the boys being back in town next week.
Oh, good night. Next one's going to be just chock-a-block full of lanterns everywhere you turn.
It's going to be like Johnny Cash's I've Been Everywhere, but it's just names of Green Lanterns.
It's going to be like if you were at Lanterns R Us. Just too soon? Okay, well, we're coming at you from... We're coming to you from the auspices of the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at JCUMail@Yahoo.com. And... Andy will fill in all the young people social media stuff. And of course, be sure and check me out on the first and third Sundays of every month on DallasOnAir.com for the Randcore Pit Live from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central, streaming live out of beautiful downtown Dallas. And on the third Sundays of every month, preceding that from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. for Isle of Toys, which is just over a year old, and I can't believe it.
Yeah, that's awesome. You guys do amazing work over there, and Isle of Toys is so much fun. Like, just stupid fun. Yeah, you can find us on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, at HK Comics Show. Feel free to interact. You were saying last issue that you want to do another Hey Kids Comics Presents, and we're going to need questions for that.
Yeah, ask us anything about comics, about past shows, about topics related to comics, comic superheroes, whatever you'd like, because we may be able to use it on the show.
Absolutely. So with that being said, let's cast off on a galactic voyage to Oa and get ready for the third issue of this story arc. Guys, it's
Oa like a Noah.
It's been a pleasure. It's going to continue to be a pleasure. We are on the big push to 300. I personally can't wait. So, Cole, do you have anything?
I'm just beside myself that we're right on the boundaries of 300 already.
We are knocking on the in a big way. So, buy, collect, enjoy your comics. It's been a while since I've said that. Join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.